Welcome to another On Wellbeing podcast. I am so pleased to welcome Dr. Heather McKee, who is one of the brightest minds that I know in behavior change, in how we can actually make differences in our lives, how we can become happier, how we can inject more positivity into our day. And she is always so full of so many good real world tips. So Heather's worked with lots of different organizations in her time to create effective evidence-based health and wellness programs. She speaks globally about how to change behavior, particularly health behavior. And I'm really grateful to have Heather speak to us today about what to do when we feel stuck. So many of us right now have lapsed, perhaps post-pandemic, through what I describe as the perma-crisis. We're launching from one difficult situation to another. And often what results is poor lifestyle behaviors. You know, we don't sleep as well. We drink a little bit too much. We're not maybe cooking as healthily as we should. We're relying on, you know, sugar fixes and high fat, high salt, high sugar. It's so easy to make ourselves feel better. Maybe not being as active as we should be. Maybe using tobacco, maybe drugs. And we're still carrying on with our day. We're still existing, but we know we want to get out of that, but we just can't seem to. We just can't seem to get out of stuck. And I know so many of us feel like we're kind of chronically stuck now, because we've been saying for so long we're going to do something, and now it almost feels like a little bit of a running joke, perhaps, with ourselves and our family. And maybe we don't even trust ourselves anymore that we're going to do it. So I'm really grateful that we've got Heather to shed some light on this and to help us to begin to take some really fundamental steps in making changes. So Heather, welcome. Tell me about feeling stuck, and tell me about what you see right now with individuals that you are working with and organizations around, I don't know, lifestyle behaviors, I guess.
Yeah, I think the thing is, Nicola, I think you said it so beautifully, like it's not that we're, you know, in a clinical state of depression or experiencing major depressive symptoms, but it's not like we're flourishing either. And so we're in this kind of mediocre in between feeling, where we're experiencing some underlying emotional distress, you know, and we're feeling a lack of motivation, you know, feeling maybe a bit empty or just not really feeling much at all. And it's not a formal mental health diagnosis. But the important thing to recognize is that the emotions that you're feeling are valid and real. And everyone feels kind of this feeling of stuckness in a different way, basically, not the same intensity. And it affects our decisions, our behaviors, our motivation, our interaction with other people, at school, at home, in the workplace. And it kind of, you know, it manifests in different ways. It might be that, you know, your moods aren't too high or too low, but you're not happy, but you wouldn't say you're sad either. Or you might feel unmotivated more than usual, or you might feel a bit unsettled, but not anxious necessarily. Or you might have difficulty focusing on certain tasks. Some days might be worse than others, or you might feel detached from life or tasks, or you might feel a bit of apathy, so just not really feeling anyway at all. Or you might be experiencing fatigue or burnout, feeling of stagnation. You know, okay, how many of us have our hands up right now? Because that's essentially,
well, yeah,
all of us,
you're
it?
Describing that mental state. So what we're actually talking about, I mean, I started talking about the kind of physical lifestyle states that so many of us have found ourselves in just now, but inextricably linked, as you've just said, are these mental states. So again, we're not talking about clinical diagnoses, which is requiring perhaps pharmaceutical treatment or medical attention. We're saying many of us are living mentally and physically in behavioral patterns that are not serving us, whether that's 10 cigarettes a day to apathy around tasks. And we are in this So many of us do feel right now as though we're languishing, we're not quite doing as well as we can physically or mentally. And I think what we want to talk about today is this concept of languishing, of being stuck, and when we've been in it for a while and we just can't see a way out, what do we begin to do?
Yeah, and I think it's important to, again, you know, as you always say, you know, understand that these feelings are valid. And often people can beat themselves up a little bit because they're saying, well, I'm not, there's nothing really wrong with me, but I'm just feeling a bit kind of meh, you know. And I think it's important, you know, you're not functioning at your best. And I think that's really, really important to understand. And I would start by saying, let's not make this another kind of stick to beat ourselves with. You know, because, you know, life is already hard enough as it is. You know, we've experienced this monumental shift in the last couple of years in place, in purpose, in our roles, you know, in our families, in work. And, you know, now more than ever, we need solid, helpful habits for our mental, our physical, our social health to help support us. There are anchors to help us weather the storm, be it financial uncertainty, be it climate change, be it whatever else the future is going to throw at us. And the thing is, the certainty of routines and developing habits that support us, it adds a certain rhythm and safety and control and structure in our life. If we think about anyone who's a parent, you know, what's the first thing that we do with children? We try and establish routines for them because it provides that sense of security and safety. If we go all the way back to like ancient texts, you know, in times of war, in times of pillaging, people went back to their routines. They went back to actually trying to, you know, I think it's in some of the Ayurvedic texts, they go back to meditating, they go back to nourishing meals, they go back to in times of war, because it helps people feel a certain level of control. It helps them like gain certainty in those times of uncertainty. And the thing is, 40% of our day is actually made up, I think it's 43% of our day is made up of the habits that we have. And so if we can cultivate those habits to support us, then, you know, that can have a massively positive impact on our lives. But the thing is, you know, it's not like, and people think habits are these elusive kind of golden things, you know, way off in the distance, but we have so many different habits, helpful and unhelpful, you know. But the thing about habits is that they're so beautiful, because once they're established, we don't have to think our way through them. You know, it's not like we lay in bed this morning weighing up the pros and cons of dental hygiene or deciding if we're in the toothbrushing kind of zone. You know, we did it
automatically
because it's a habit that we have.
That analogy speaks volumes, and it's one that I have used before with students as well. It's like, you know, you don't need motivation if you have a habit. So if, you know, you want to try and start going to the gym, then having your gym bag packed and ready at the side of the bed is far more powerful than wondering whether or not you feel motivated to go to the gym. And that brushing the teeth, we don't sit and wrestle with whether we should brush our teeth at night. It's a habit, and we don't question it. And when you don't question it and you go on to automatic, then you, before you know it, these habits have already formed. So just to backpedal a little bit for the listener, we're trying to find some solutions for the fact that so many of us feel stuck in a mental state of, as Heather and I have called it, meh, just not feeling great, and physically in so many habits that, again, aren't horrendous, but they're not the healthiest either. And we're sitting in this and wondering quite how we motivate ourselves out of it. And I think what we're saying is, well, actually, when you're feeling like this, when the world around you is uncertain and it doesn't feel as though it's in your control, which is probably creating some of these negative habits, the first thing you should look at is the fact that 43% of your day is made up of habits. So let's go back to the basics and start to think about forming some positive habits that will bring about changes, and that doing that will not only make you feel empowered, you will quickly start to see the benefits of that. Is that right, Heather?
Yeah, and I think the important thing to understand here is what is a habit, first of all. So habits are form through context-dependent repetition. What does that mean? It means do the same thing in the same circumstance enough times and it becomes a habit. So habits are kind of formed over this loop. There's a cue or a trigger, there's a behavior, and then it's in response to a particular reward. So the cue or the trigger might be going into the bathroom in the morning, you see your toothbrush, the behavior is brushing your teeth, and the reward is positive dental hygiene, you know, or feeling fresh breath. That's interesting as well with toothbrushing, because you don't get immediate rewards. It's actually a long-term thing, and it's something that we don't necessarily think about. But we've repeated it often enough in the same context that actually it's become a habit. The same with kind of getting into the car, you put on your seatbelt straight away. But, you know, a lot of us are developing unhelpful habits. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we get stuck on a project on work and we think, oh yeah, well, I'll just check the news right now for a bit of positive distraction. But the next time we get stuck on a positive, or when we get stuck at a project in work, our brain reminds us, what did we do the last time? Oh yeah, we checked the news. Let's do that, because it made us feel a bit of relief after feeling bored. And then we create this neurological feedback loop around that. And the more often we repeat something in a given circumstance, whether it's a helpful or an unhelpful habit, the more we hardwire that into our brain and the more we make it automatic. But the good news is that our habits can be adapted or changed. And like studies show that understanding how habits work makes them easier to control. But often it's our beliefs about what it takes to be successful in habits that actually holds us back. And I think before we kind of think about how to create habits, we have to think about, well, what are our beliefs around creating, or what, how are we holding this? And I always like to say the first step that I like people to take is to start with joy. So, you know, we're already having a bit of a miserable time. We're feeling a bit meh. We're feeling a bit stuck. You know, and so we have to think about, well, what are those healthy habits, those helpful habits in our life that make us feel good? Because, you know, so often when it comes to change, we feel like we need to berate or beat ourselves into change. If we take the example that you gave, Nicola, you know, of being in the gym or exercising, you know, when we join a new gym, you know, we go to that gym floor, and what do? We scan the floor and we're like, right, the assault bike or the Stairmaster, I'm going to pick the hardest thing to do because it's the hardest, it's going to be most beneficial for me, so I'm going to flog myself at that. Or if we're trying to start healthy eating, you know, we're like, right, we're going to go supermarket, we'll buy the most boring foods we can find, because we're like, well, if I can eat steamed vegetables and fish for the next couple of weeks, eventually I'll love it, and you know, that will stick. But ultimately, you know, it's quite interesting. There was an interesting study that they did on this, where they got two groups of walkers to start walking habits, and they told one group to just start, you know, walking for fun, to just really, you know, try and enjoy it as much as they can, and their whole goal was just to have fun. And they told the second group, well, you're walking for benefits, you're walking for the health benefits, you're walking for, you know, this is like a hard exercise, but it's going to improve your fitness over time. And when they brought those groups back, what they found was the fun group were the ones that had stuck with their habit the most. And I actually had other positive psychological markers as a result of it. And an interesting thing that they did, and you'll know this from your research background, Nicola, is sneaky psychologists sometimes have a side study within a study. And when they were filling out the psychometric, the questionnaires at the end about their psychological well-being, they also had a bowl of sweets next to them while they were filling out the questionnaires. And what they found was those in the for fun group ate about half as much sweets as those in the benefit group. And what they hypothesized was that the in benefit group were actually almost rebelling against the regime that they had created for themselves. They were compensating and they actually overate. And so the moral of this, I think, you know, research is, you know, that we need to find fun, because if we can find fun, the rest becomes easy. There's a lovely quote from Mary Poppins, which is like, in every job that must be done, there is a recipe for fun. If you can find the fun, then snap the jobs again. And, you know, anyone who's a parent or has a niece or nephew or knows that, you know, when we're trying to get children to be healthy, we're not like telling them about the long-term benefits of a tomato or a carrot. You know, we're making them into the shape of a dinosaur, so it's fun. We're not telling them about, you know, their cardiovascular fitness. We're bringing them to the playground so they can play, you know, so that it's fun. I think, and yet we don't extend the same fun for ourselves, you know, and that's where we miss out.
What a revelation for quite a few people, I think, who maybe have been thinking about this in a different way. You've just summed up part, you know, one of the biggest problems, I think, about why people don't stay with habits, why these things don't seem to work. And that is that when it's a chore, when it's something we must do, it's like the dieting, the exercise mentality. And I always say we have to change the discourse. We have to change the narrative around it. Because people don't have lots of willpower and motivation after a long day at work. So if the thing that they then have to do, the exercise, the making a healthy meal, feels like it requires willpower, motivation, and it's difficult, then they're not going to do it. And like you've just given that great example of the walking group for fun and the walking group for benefits, you know, it's just gone right. You know, they've not even thought about it, the fun ones. They've enjoyed the moment. And then how interesting that they ate less sweet stuff. And the hypothesis was because the other group were sort of rebelling, well, we've had to do this, you know, benefit thing. And again, we come back to that. You change the narrative, you change the discourse, and you find the joy. So we're talking about how do we create habits for change? Well, the first thing I think that you're saying, Heather, is, well, you certainly don't beat yourself up and make the habit something that feels like a chore or a difficult thing. You try and put and inject. You try and trick your mind almost to see it as a positive thing. Yeah, is that what we need to do?
Yeah, and I would even say let's be super pragmatic about this. Let's create a joy list. What are those healthy habits that bring you joy? And I mean, you know, pause this right now and take a second and think about what type of exercise you enjoy. Maybe you hate flogging yourself at the gym. Maybe you hate spinning and you're only doing it because it's the latest trend that's going on. Maybe you love, you know, dancing. Maybe that's something that you really enjoy. Maybe you love going for a hike with your dog. Maybe you love being out in the fresh in nature. And, you know, then think about, maybe it's that you love that kind of warm glow that you get after a run or a swim. You know, really tune into those things. And the interesting thing is, if we can create a list, but if we can also focus on the feelings we get when we engage with those habits that we enjoy, it actually trains our brain to want to engage with those. So the next time you're lying in bed and been like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go for a run because it hurts and it's hard and everything else. If we can train our brain to actually say, well, actually, I love that feeling when I come back in the door after a run. I love that feeling of accomplishment. I love that feeling of clarity. I love that feeling of success. It actually primes our brain to crave that. We can crave our helpful habits as much as our unhelpful habits too. And so what I would say is start with a list and start collecting those healthy habits that you may enjoy. And it may not be exercise or diet. It might be that you love art, you love creating, you love making arts and crafts. And that just helps you, like, you feel really refreshed and revived afterwards. It brings like clarity of mind. It feels like easeful for you. Whatever it is, start creating your joy list, because ultimately, as Nicola said, you know, if you can find joy, it makes the rest easy. And so we need to start with joy rather than starting with a massive mountain to climb.
So we start with joy. So if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling like you've just been existing in habits that don't serve you well for some time, you start with joy. And as Heather says, you look at the things that you enjoy doing and you focus on them more. So, okay, so let's just create a problem for that and say, okay, so I'm somebody that's listening and I'm thinking, well, that's fine and well, but I get up, I've got, you know, I don't know, single parent, two children, I'm ferrying them about, then I'm going to work all day, then I've got to, you know, collect them, I've got to look after my mom, I've got to cook, I've got to do the shopping, you know, where in here can I find the joy and create the different habits that are going to serve me well? How can I stop, you know, sinking onto the sofa at 9 o'clock at night with a bottle of wine, not having exercised, feeling exhausted, I'm feeling pretty down about my life? Where in that day, how can I do that?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. And I would say, you know, we always set out thinking that we're going to be able to, like, our future selves are going to be so perfect, and we're going to, you know, we set ourselves as a goal. For example, we say, okay, well, I'm going to go exercise 3 times a week in the gym, or we think the only way to be healthy is to, you know, be someone who goes to the gym. And so we think, well, if I don't go to the gym, then the only option is to kind of sink in on the sofa. And I always say to people, well, we need to actually create a scale for our habits, because your habits have to be relatable to your life. They have to be relevant to your life. And so for you right now, going to the gym might not be an option. If you're a single parent, you know, you'd have to get childcare for that. It's a huge logistical nightmare for you. And that's maybe why you're a little bit stuck as well, because you're like, well, I can't do that. I can't go to the gym. But the thing is, all habits exist on a scale. So if we look at going to the gym or going for a run 3 times a week as your 10 out of 10 on your scale, let's work all the way back. What's a 9? What's an 8? What's a 7? What's a 6? What's a 5? All the way back to a 1. A 1 might be just doing 5 press-ups while the kettle boils in the morning, or, you know, doing a little quick workout while you've got the food in the oven, or running around after your children in the garden, playing football. I think it's important, you know, if you want to create certain habits in your life, let's take movement as an example. If you want to create movement habits in your life, that it doesn't always have to be a 10 out of 10. We have to create that flexibility, because ultimately that's what the research shows, that actually habits honed with a certain level of flexibility are those that are way more resilient, because they're easier to repeat. And as you said so importantly, Nicola, it's the simple habits that are the ones that we repeat. And if we go back to the definition of habit change, you know, habit change is formed through context dependent repetition. If we make it easy enough to repeat often enough, it will become a habit. And so it doesn't matter what the exercise is, it's that you're repeating it often enough that it becomes a habit. But we can't wait until circumstances are perfect. We can't wait till we've had enough sleep, or we're in a good enough mood, or we've eaten enough food that day, or we haven't got a lot of work on or whatever, because that's not real life.
No.
Real life is always going to throw us curveballs. So we have to design our habits for our real life. And so for that single parent, it may be that, yeah, they're just doing, you know, a few push-ups while they're waiting for the food to come out of the oven, or they're doing a few squats, or actually they walk the kids to school for 10 minutes in the morning, or and then when they've dropped them off, they do an extra loop around the park. It's what's accessible to you. So start thinking not out there far in the distance about what some online influencer is doing, completely. But think about, well, what's realistic for you in the context of your life.
I think, Heather, you've just nailed it. I think so. But, you know, we have this, as I've said before, the 24/7 access to everybody else's life. And it's actually so destructive to change. We think it's inspirational, but actually, I think a lot of the time it isn't, because you are your own inspiration. So you have to look internally at what you can do and what you have done. And when you start to build yourself up as the superhero, as the source of inspiration, you become so much more powerful. And that's when you think, okay, maybe I'm not running for 2 hours and then having a green smoothie, but guess what? You know, as you've said, I'm walking an extra block back. I'm, you know, finding joy in doing a crossword. I am looking after myself in my own way. And the more that you do that, the more I think other habits begin to change. So isn't it true, Heather, that once you start to do small things for yourself, the rest kind of begins to fall into place? And that's much better than having this lofty vision of what you should be achieving, which I know sounds sexier and will sell more books, but that actually isn't going to lead to sustained lifelong change and transformation of the mind or the body. And, you know, trying to see what's accessible to you, which is what you've said. And another thing you said, which I see time and time again in my research, is people saying, oh, you know, when my daughter's gone off to university, I'm going to start to get healthier. Or when my knee's better, I'm going to start to swim. When I'm, you know, when I've sorted out this, when I'm in a new job, that's when I'll start to, we are waiting, we are postponing things. And it's like, just make some small changes now. And that is how you begin to come out of stuck.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the thing is, like, we think that if we want to make big changes to our lives, that we have to suffer for it, you know, and a year rolls around and we're suffering, like, right, we're going to give up sugar, we're going to give up alcohol, alcohol, we're going to save loads of money, we're going to be super focused at work, we're going to apply ourselves in university, whatever it is. And the more goals we add in, the more we actually take away. And it's a concept in psychology known as goal dilution. We actually dilute our effectiveness because we're trying to do too much. And ultimately, it's because we have a finite amount of willpower. And you alluded to this, Nicola, earlier. You know, willpower is like a muscle. You know, if I go to the gym for the next 7 days and train my right bicep, by the time I get to the end of the week, I wouldn't be able to pick up a cup of tea, you know? But if I go once a week for 7 weeks, that's much more habit forming. And it makes it much more likely, actually, that, you know, I'm developing that habit and I'm getting stronger. And the thing is, ultimately, for habit change, it needs to be a gradual process in order for it to be sustainable. It needs to be through consistent, small, positive changes. And I like to call these bite-sized changes because they're so tiny that they don't actually impact our willpower. So we don't actually have to, you know, force our way in, force our way to the gym or force our way to something. We're making them so accessible and so easy. And I think that's what's really, really important for people. There's a funny study on this where they got two groups of people to develop flossing habits. And they got one group where they went out and they said to them, okay, well, you just need to floss every night and we'll follow up with you in a couple of months and see how you're getting on. And then they had another group where they got them just to floss one tooth a night. And it was almost like a joke, but they said, listen, we'll follow up a couple of months. And when they followed up a couple of months' time, those that had the best dental hygiene scores were the one tooth group. And the thing was, because they made it ridiculously easy to engage. You know, in behavioral science, we often say friction. You know, they made it frictionless. They decreased the barriers to entry. Mm-hmm. They made it frictionless for those people to engage. Now, they often didn't just floss one tooth. But the fact that they had made it so small, once they'd shown up, because getting started is the hardest part. Once they'd shown up to that kind of tooth flossing routine, they were just like, well, I might as well, I'm here now, I've lost a few more. And it's the exact same when it comes to anything else in our life and our habits. You know, instead of trying to think, well, I can only meditate for, you know, I need to meditate for 30 minutes on a mountaintop and a cushion. No, maybe it's just while the kettle boils in the morning, you're taking those long, slow breaths out. Or, you know, you're saying, well, I can only exercise if I go to the gym. No, maybe it's just doing a few squats while you're waiting to get into the shower while your roommate's in there. You know, it's about taking a step back and looking at, well, what's that small change for you? What's your equivalent of flossing one tooth? Because the thing is, then we don't feel like we've got this mountain to climb and we're much more likely to engage. And it's those habits that we repeat, those behaviors that we repeat become habits quicker. And so I often say, you know, if you're struggling to improve, you're struggling to get unstuck, the problem isn't you, the problem is your system. And if you have a better system for change, then change can happen. And one way to create that system is focus on the joy, but make it as small as possible and as easy as possible to engage with that habit. And then you can scale up from there and you'd be so surprised at the impact that that can have over time.
I love that concept of asking everybody listening right now to think, what is your one tooth? What is your equivalent of one tooth? And it reminds me a lot of something I've spoken about before on this podcast. It's, you know, the author BJ Fogg and his concept of tiny habits. And it's that don't look at the 2 liter water bottle and say, oh, I've got to drink that today. Just wake up and tell yourself you'll drink one sip and inevitably you'll have more than a sip. So it's you know, you've just said if the system isn't working, change the system, make it small and give it joy. So if you're feeling stuck, and that's what we're talking about on this podcast today, whether it's mentally, whether it's with your physical lifestyle behaviors, the first place to start is not a lofty goal, is not berating yourself and telling yourself how terrible you are. And it's certainly not looking for willpower and motivation, which come in teeny tiny amounts every day. And we mostly use them up just trying not to lose our self. I nearly said something else. Just trying not to lose our stuff. And that's, we use our willpower up just trying to be sociable and nice and not snap at everybody, right? So there isn't any left at the end of the day or at the various points when we suddenly need it. So we have to just find systems and habits that are joyful and that are small and that we can get some pleasure out of. And whether that's, like we said, you know, creating more movement, whether it's altering what we eat, whether it's perhaps being less anxious or stressful in our working day, these are the ways that we do it. So yeah, I love that thing. What is your 1 tooth? Okay, so they get the 1 tooth. We start to find the small changes, and then what do we do? Then what do we do to you know, increase our positive mental health or our lifestyle behaviors?
So I suppose the next step for me is, you know, thinking about what habits bring you joy, thinking about what within those habits, what's one small change that you can make, or thinking about them on a scale from 1 to 10, and making sure that, you know, you don't just have that perfect ideal circumstance, but all of the other options are available for you. And then the next step is to think about putting them into context in your real life. And so once you've kind of got a small change there, so once you've decided on, okay, well, actually, you know, what I'm going to do this week is I'm going to try and do, you know, press ups when I'm waiting for the food to come out of the oven or whatever. The key with that is you have a specific time or habit that you're latching it onto that already exists. And what they've shown in habit science is it's a concept called habit stacking. There's a lot of habits. Like I said, 43% of our day is made up of habits that we already have. So if we can latch a habit onto something that's existing, it makes it much easier to follow it through. So if every day you're putting on the oven for, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, you know, and that's your window, then that's going to be a great cue for you to initiate that behavior. And it makes it much more likely that you'll be able to repeat that habit often enough. So they've done this in dental hygiene studies, where it's much more likely that someone will floss immediately after they brush their teeth, because they've paired those habits, they've habit stacked those habits together. So think about your day, think about your context. Think about, you know, things that you do day in, day out. Is it have a cup of tea? Is it making the dinner? Is it dropping the kids off to school? Is it getting the bus? Is it, you know, turning on your computer when you get to the desk, you know, or is it a specific time of day? You know, think about what are the things you already do and how you can actually attach that small change onto that so that it fits within the context of your life. You're not trying to create the most important. You know, I see so many people who are like trying to manage their stress, and they're like, right, I'm going to meditate first thing in the morning, but they're trying to get the kids out to school or they're trying to get themselves off to work. And then it becomes really stressful and they're like, oh God. And they're trying to sit and still their mind, but at the same time, they've got all these things that they have to do in the day running through their head. And actually, you know, maybe that's not the best time of day for them. Maybe it's after they drop the kids off that they just sit in the car for 3 minutes and play a song that actually is a really nice song and then do their breathing. Or maybe when they pull into the drive at the end of the day, they just take 2 minutes before they go into the house just to take some long, slow breaths. So I think the important thing here is the habits are formed through context-dependent repetition. And context is your environment. And so think about, where is it in your day that you already have established habits? And think about that small change that you wish to create. How can you latch that or attach that on to something that you already do? And that will further enhance and make it easier for you to engage with it.
Also, I think it really does reinforce the concept of adding rather than subtracting, because mentally, when we feel like we're taking something away, it's not always as positive, is it? But if we think we're just adding something on, it feels perhaps a little bit easier and it feels a little bit more positive too. So this concept of habit stacking, I mean, it's infinite, isn't it? You could just, you know, because there's so many things, like you say, that we do across our day that are repetitive things. And all you do at each one is you tag on something else. Well, you know, I make a cup of coffee. Well, I'll also do this at this point. I do, I have to drive to the kids to hear at this point. Well, that's when I'll use the time to do X or Y. So it really does call on us to pay attention to our day though, isn't it? That's what this all comes mm-hmm. back to. And I think, you know, we've been very clear here about how you get started. You get started by changing the system. You find something, you know, with joy. You make it small. But it does require a little bit of work from the individual to pay attention to the day. And so many of us don't want to look, do we? Because we're sort of a little bit ashamed maybe that's too strong a word, we don't really want to look because we feel like we're already a little bit flawed. And when we really peer into our day and how it works and things we do, we'll feel a sense of guilt. How can we start to pay attention? How can we start to become more self-aware and look in without feeling, I suppose, those feelings? I don't know if you can speak about that a bit, Heather.
Yeah, I think the thing is, like, we all have, like, this is why I say helpful and unhelpful habits, because I don't like to say good or bad habits, because I feel like it moralizes our habits and it makes us feel like a bad person. Like, every habit serves a function, whether it's a helpful behavior or an unhelpful behavior. If you find yourself, you know, each night kind of, you know, drinking too much or eating too much sugar or, you know, binge watching a series, you're doing that because it serves a particular function in your life. You know, it might be that you want to escape certain feelings or you want to, you know, deal with certain emotions. And what I would say with that is we can lean into that and we can use that as a way to discover what works for us. And what I mean by that is something that I always encourage people to do is to do a temptation tracker. And this is something that is based on one of my published papers from a good few years ago, where we created an app where people noted when they were tempted most and why. And there was what particular times a day were they tempted to engage in unhelpful behaviors and what drove them, importantly. Because when I, like I talked about at the top of this podcast, we talked about habits are formed through a cue or trigger. And there's a particular behavior, so that's you performing the habit in response to a particular reward. So we're always looking for a reward in our behaviors. And so instead of feeling ashamed about your, you know, your unhelpful behaviors, I want you to lean into those and become curious, become a habit detective around them. When are they happening in your day? And what's the reward that you're seeking in them? So, for example, you know, if you find that you're procrastinating at work, going on news websites or on social media, or when you're meant to be studying, is that because you need a break? Is it actually that you just need to step away? Is it that you're looking for a social connection? Is it that you're feeling a little bit lonely or isolated? Is it that you're feeling anxious in that moment? And so start to ask yourself these questions. Why is it that I do that? Or might be just that that's the same thing you do at that certain time of day, day in, day out. But what we found in our study was that there was definite patterns for each individual. And actually, overall, most people were most tempted at like 3:30 in their day and 8:30 at night. And those most likely temptations were sugar or alcohol temptations as well. And it was, the most likely driver was stress relief. And that can be really, really interesting. So if we start to look at those times a day and ask ourselves, and we talked about this in our last episode, Nicola, you know, what else can I do in that situation? What else could be more helpful or more productive for me to help with my stress relief? And therefore, you're setting up the habit still that remains the same. You still got the cue or the trigger, but the behavior changes. And that's a really useful way to reframe our habits and actually make them work for us rather than against us. So track your habits over the next week. Ask yourself, when and where are you most tempted? And really try and dig into the why. And I'm not saying you're going to get this right straight away, but over time, you'll start to learn, okay, well, maybe I'll try this in this circumstance. That might not work for you. You might go back to the other behavior. Well, I'll try this. And over time, eventually, you will find something that works for you. And cumulatively, that will have a positive impact overall on your stress response. And it will make it less likely that you will give in to more temptations over time. It won't change overnight, but it's an experiment. And it can tell you really interesting insights and create an awareness, like you said, Nicola, of actually where your habits fall in your day and teach you a lot about actually what drives them.
I think that's such a helpful way to look at the things that we don't like about ourselves. So rather than, you know, us encouraging you to be more self-aware in order to make change, and people think, well, that's fine, but actually I'd rather not look inwards, I'd rather not think about it, because I'm just going to feel grumpy at myself for how I've been living my life or whatever. And it's like, well, no, be curious, because at the end of the day, the habits you've chosen are usually a coping strategy, distraction, relief. They're actually very, very clever. We just need to change them. So it's like, don't feel guilty about it. I love the concept of being a habit detective, And that idea of curiosity, you know, when you're sitting pouring another glass of wine, rather than think, oh, why am I doing that again? You think, oh, that's interesting that I'm still drinking, or that I've opened another bottle of wine, or that I've gone and bought, I don't know, a lot of sugary products, or that I've chosen not to go to the gym again. That's interesting that I'm not doing that. What is that serve? Why am I doing that right now? How is that helping me right now? And think about it from that perspective. Like you've just said, lean into it. Don't lean away. Don't ignore the things that we don't like about ourselves or that we're doing. You lean in and you look, and that curiosity allows you to see what you're getting from it. And when you see what you're getting from it, you can start to think, oh, what else might give me that? And to begin to experiment over time, I think. It's been so helpful, Heather, I think, to talk to you. And you've given us so many examples of things we can do. We started off this podcast today talking about how so many of us are feeling stuck in low mood, or just stuck in unhealthy habits, and we just can't seem to get out of them. And we talked about how much social media and press sort of make us feel we should be like a boot camp approach to it, but how that just backfires. And I think, Heather, your idea of finding tiny moments of joy in habits that are small, and then stacking them, tagging them onto something we already do, and applauding ourselves and giving ourselves a feeling that we're getting control back by doing these things is probably a really helpful starting point. And then also, rather than berating ourselves for the things we don't like that we do, just look curiously and say, why am I doing that? What am I getting from that? That's interesting. And then start to become a habit detective. So I hope that, I know that I have, we can take some things from this conversation that will help us to start to make changes. I think perhaps the biggest takeaway is it doesn't need to be grandiose or, you know, impressive, because normally those things don't last, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if we go back to the part, the thing is, you know, if you're struggling, if you're stuck, if you feel like you can't get out of where you are, the problem isn't you, the problem is your system. And if you can change your system through, you know, using some of these tools and techniques, then I promise that change will happen for you. And so to that, I think that's just a really important thing to remember.
Thank you, Heather. What a great point to end on. If you're stuck and you're unable to make changes, then the problem isn't you, it's the system. And you, the only thing you can do is to set up a different system. And that's a, you know, that's something that you should feel empowered, I think, rather than threatened by. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Heather. Great to speak to you again, and I learned so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Nicola.